The Paradise Center for the Arts is a vibrant cultural and artistic gathering spot in historic downtown Faribault. The Paradise is committed to offering high-quality visual and performing art opportunities for Faribault and our region. Regular events spotlight some of the best artists and musicians in our area and throughout Minnesota and the Upper Midwest. Our beautifully restored facility includes art galleries, classrooms, clay and textile labs, a gift shop and rehearsal spaces, in addition to a 300-seat auditorium. Visit ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org for a full schedule of events or call our box office at 507-332-7372. Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning. This is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, radio for the imagination. I want to thank you so much for listening to the show as we celebrate all things creating and stories. So let's get together and tune our imaginations. This morning's show, we're going to have two segments and maybe a quote that's often attributed to Mark Twain, but not always sourced to Mark Twain, that history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme, is an apt introduction to today's show. Maybe today's theme is about those echoes of history and how we need to stand in that place of looking back and moving forward, and just to be present. The first segment of Art Zany Radio Studio, I'm going to welcome Celtic musician and master folk artist Laura McKenzie to preview the Brass Lassie performance at Armory Square in Northfield tonight. And the second segment in the Art Zany Radio Studio, I will feature the theater artists from the Northfield Arts Guild, Misha Edwards from the production The Revolutionists, and Sebastian Lawler and another actor from the production of The Outsider. So let's get started. The first event is Brass Lassie at Armory Square. That is Friday, October 21st at 7:30, right here in downtown Northfield. It's really exciting to see that they're going to be back together. It's a bold trad band based in the Twin Cities, combines the traditional tunes, songs, and style with dazzling modern horn lines, sparkling their own genre of eclectic, remarkable music. The ensemble performs extraordinary takes on Scottish, Irish, and French music, traditional and new, featuring all a four-piece horn section, rhythm section, fiddle, flutes, pipes, and vocals, and occasional percussive dance. It is joyous, it is smart, and it is top-notch. And so we're going to go ahead and take a listen to a conversation I had with Laura McKenzie. She is considered the Celtic music wizard by the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the high priestess of Celtic music by Minnesota Public Radio, and she is just an amazing person who has appeared in many productions, performed in many ways, and done many things to promote this music in our community and around the world. So let's take a listen to a conversation with Laura McKenzie. Welcome to Art Zany Radio. It's a thrill to have you here. I've been hearing about you, and now I finally get to meet you, and I thank you for being here. I want to ask you a little bit about, since you have so many great musical experiences, adventures, and talents, how do you describe what you do when somebody asks you about yourself?
Well, thank you, Paula. That is a wonderful question, but not very easy to answer. I would say that I am a performer, and a presenter, and a programmer, and a producer, and a teacher of traditional music. By that, I mean the music of Ireland and Scotland, and also England and some other Celtic tradition regions. And also, I do all of those things in very diverse contexts.
Yeah, you do. You have so many different ways that this path has taken you. It's quite exciting, and I'm really thrilled that Brass Lassie is going to be here in Northfield, and I want to thank Susan Vistendahl for making the connection. And I read in her article in the Entertainment Guide that you didn't grow up listening to this music, which surprised me because it feels like it's in your bones, and it's something that would have been a part of your story, but that there was a gift from your father that sent you off on a course that changed the rest of your life.
Yes, it did. That's right. Susan had that right. I grew up studying classical music and playing in the school band and the school orchestra and singing in choir and madrigals, and then going off to college later, also studying classical music, and still something turned for me. But when I was in high school, my father did give me a surprise Christmas gift of a card on the tree that had $50 in it. That was a long time ago. I'm not going to tell you how long, but $50 was a lot then, and it said for bagpipes. And I didn't know what to do with that because we didn't talk about bagpipes. We didn't talk about our family heritage really at all. And there was no traditional Scottish music played in the house. So I accepted it graciously and kind of quietly. He passed away a couple of years after that, and not long after that, something snapped, and I started studying bagpipes. And now I play about 6 or 7 different types of bagpipes.
Yeah, not only the bagpipes, but you play a whole range of wind instruments. I think everyone should look up Susan's article, which is from the Entertainment Guide. It is from 2016, Catching Up with Celtic Music Wizard, Laura McKenzie. And there's this great picture of you with all those different wind instruments and flutes and amazing array. So I'm kind of curious that... How does it feel to like learn a new instrument? Is it like building on the past one, or does each one have its own, you know, challenges, and, you know, it's like starting a different thing?
Well, there are connections in that they are all wind powered, so they do build upon each other as I have added them over time. But each one has its own quirks, and the fingering systems might be a little different. And what I consider wind instruments sometimes are different what people might imagine. Like my concertina is also a wind instrument, but it doesn't play like a flute at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how many instruments would you say that you have performed with or recorded with or, you know, played on stage?
Well, I could say within each category, there's a number of instruments, but it's basically concertinas, wooden flutes, and whistles, and bagpipes, and voice. And then there's quite a few instruments in each of those categories.
Yeah, it's so much fun to learn about all those things. And they're, you know, it's so great to have someone, because you do teach these to students.
I do, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so is there, what kind of students come to you to learn about these instruments?
Well, usually people want to learn about Irish-style flute or whistle. Those are the most accessible instruments to have in hand for people who want to learn. I have taught people playing Scottish small pipes as well, but they have to have the instrument, so that's a little more difficult to acquire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it must be amazing to be able to have that range of instruments. Because one of the things that you've done is you've explored Celtic music, and through travels and playing with all kinds of, you know, just well-known and then folks in the countryside and all kinds of different experiences. But you've also worked to sort of creating some new, I'm not sure what the right word is, especially like with this new album, Brass Lassie, mm-hmm. Some iterations or interpretations or ways that of, you know, for all of us to listen to it anew. And I think that's a really fascinating thing. What has connecting with both that history and then trying to bring it to modern audiences taught you about that music?
Well, yes, you are correct that I have learned mainly, actually, from traditional musicians in Ireland and Scotland and across North America as well, people that were not professional, but they were tradition bearers that I was very fortunate to learn from extraordinary people. And now, with Brass Lassie, the traditional music remains the foundation. It's important to me that it's not a fusion group. Like, I'm not breaking down the traditional forms or changing the style that I would play the traditional tunes, or the fiddler as well. She's the same. She still plays them in a very traditional style. But what we've done is surrounded the tunes and boosted them and enhanced the whole oral experience with something I love, which is a horn section. Mm-hmm. I'm not a brass player, so I'm very excited to have invited horn players and with a rhythm section, too, people that understand traditional music. It was important when this group was founded, I selected rhythm players that had worked a lot with traditional music. So they didn't have to go on that learning curve. They knew what to do. So that's what we do. It's still, the foundation is traditional music, but it's got this exciting garment around it and there to uplift it as well.
Yeah, I think that's what I experienced too in listening to this album was there's so much that you can recognize, but it feels newer, but and bigger and joyful in a really delightful way. I think, did you have an experience as playing it? And tell me about making those arrangements too, because that is a to honor that tradition and then enhance it is a challenge.
It is, and we have a wonderful horn arranger, Peter Enblum, who is now the tenor trombone player in Brass Lassie. We are so lucky to have him. He and I would get together initially when I was just getting this group going, and I would bring him recordings of traditional music, and we'd listen to it, and I could tell if certain things would resonate with him. And if they did, it was on the list to work on an arrangement. So he really gets the credit for having the creative imagination to come up with those horn arrangements and also inform the rhythm section of good harmonic arrangements as well. Mm-hmm. I pretty much just brought the traditional tunes and the medleys and the ideas of how to put the traditional tunes together to the table. But after that, Peter Enblum deserves the big stars, big gold stars.
It's really fabulous, and it's so much fun to listen to. And there's influences that maybe people wouldn't expect when you hear the title Brass Lassie, and you think, because there are songs that come from all kinds of different traditions. And you want to tell us a little bit about some of those influences and it, you know, the range that you'll hear if folks come and see Brass Lassie.
Yes. Well, we have a lot of dance tunes in our repertoire, and those are coming from Ireland and from Scotland and also Brittany in Brittany, France, not Central France. We do have music from Central France. That'll be the next concert. But, Brittany and also from Cape Breton in Nova Scotia. Very, very rich Scottish heritage there. And we are adding, we don't have it yet for this week, but we're adding some music from, other music from the continent. We have some Danish traditional music coming up. And probably in the future a little Swedish, but also more Irish and Scottish.
That's what makes it great for your ear, I think, because it's a new, you hear something that really pulls you in and makes you want to, you know, not only you understand, maybe if you listen to this music, some of those traditional rhythms and patterns, but then there's this other part that comes in and you're like, wow, I like that. That's what makes it so fabulous. Maybe we should play a little bit of the music. I think I'm going to pop on the one called Sheepskins and Beeswax, which I thought was a great title. Maybe you want to introduce the tune for us. And this had a lot of what I loved about it was the introduction with some of your flute playing, which just, or no, it wasn't a flute. I made that mistake again. Mm-hmm. It is a whistle, the Irish whistle.
That's right. It's a whistle. But, you know, that's okay because technically a whistle is a flute. It's a fipple flute rather than a transverse flute. So.
And fipple is a word that is about the direction that it's played?
It's about what usually is the direction, but it's about the mouthpiece that directs your airstream into the tube.
Okay.
To make the sound, yeah.
Oh, and what about this particular song, Sheepskins and Beeswax?
Well, this is a real dance tune that we learned from a French-Canadian band, La Boutine Souriante. So it's a French-Canadian tune. And we have dance on this. On this live recording that you're going to hear, you will hear a dancer's steps at some point. We will have guest percussive dancers on this particular tune on Friday.
So that might be a little preview of what's coming, right? That's from the Flying Foot Forum. That's Joe Chuala. I hope I got that right. Mm-hmm. And Carla Grotting. And so folks may know that name because Joe was down here, several years ago, many, many, many years ago, working with the college students in a production of Alice in Wonderland, I believe it was, which was spectacular. And I had a chance to interview him for that and really adored it. So his talents are many, but he'll be joining you on stage for this performance in Northfield as well.
Yes, they will. And this is just the beginning of our partnership, and we're so excited about it. Joe and I have been talking about this for years, so it's wonderful that we're finally able to do this. The Flying Foot Forum is about to celebrate, I believe, their 30th anniversary.
Another great opportunity for folks to learn about the arts. But let's take a listen to Sheepskins and Beeswax. Here we go on Art Zany Radio. Lassie, now you know what we're talking about. That is just absolutely beautiful. I think it's so fun, especially that turn in the middle there where you kind of get the surprise of the horns coming in and just really grabs you. And it's such a, you just feel like moving. I don't know. There's something spectacular about that sound.
We will be sure to leave some dance space at the Armory Square on Friday night.
So there'll be people who'll be able to do that. And I should remind folks that Brass Lassie is going to be at the Armory Square in Northfield. That is going to be on Friday, October 21st, 2022 at 7:30. And you can get tickets now by going, it's an Eventbrite, but you can go to either brasslassie.com to their events page and click, or you can go to the Armory and click on their website, and they'll lead you to that as well. And you're recommending people get those tickets in advance?
Well, it's nice for us if they do, but they will be available at the door as well.
And the ticket price is $15 in advance and also available at the door.
Yes, and that sounds strange to you, but I have a personal belief in not having a break for advance tickets.
Ah, so yeah.
I know that's a bit roguish, but
everybody sees the same show, right?
Yeah.
And it's what a great price that is for an evening of great music. And you mentioned the Armory Square, which has had so many different iterations in Northfield. I know I was thinking that that's where my kids went for a couple of years. The Y had their classes there as when they were building their building, and you know, so it was a fun place to go. And we've, of course, with the Armory Square now, there's a great place to go for music and events. But you have some deep connections in Northfield and have some great stories about Armory Square, don't you?
Yes. Well, when I was a teenager, there were rock and roll dances there for teens, and I remember them pretty well. I especially remember the excitement of approaching those steps, going up to that beautiful doorway, and there was always a nice glow and a nice pound of sound coming through that doorway. So it was very exciting. It's nice to have that connection. And then in more recent years, Contratopia, a contra dance band, would do at least an annual dance and maybe twice a year at the Armory. Again, before it was called Armory Square. And the piano player in that beautiful contra dance band, Contratopia, is also the piano player in Brass Lassie.
I love the way that story connects. And what, I mean, it is, you have some amazingly talented musicians. And you can tell that from just listening to the album and looking at some of the videos. And Brass Lassie had really been a dream of yours for quite a while. Tell us how that vision came to be and how you kept that alive and what it feels like to finally, you know, be able to bring that to the stage.
I started thinking about an ensemble like Brass Lassie probably, maybe 15 years ago or so, when I was enamored with the recordings of this French-Canadian band, La Boutine Souriante. They did a similar treatment of the horn section and rhythm section with traditional French-Canadian music. And I always imagined it with more Scottish and Irish and other types of traditional dance music. And I did dream about it for years. I just relished the thought. And something, once again, something snapped. I'm not sure how or when, but suddenly I figured out how to do it. And I went to work and found Peter Enblom. And then to find the horn players, the original horn players, I wrote up a letter. Very old-fashioned of me, I know, but I wrote up a letter on nice paper. And I would go to big band concerts and big band rehearsals in the Twin Cities and pass out this letter to the female horn players, because I was seeking a female horn section. And I gave it to a few others too. So I kind of did footwork in order to put it together initially.
And it's come true. And you have this new album, Brass Lassie, which is got a whole great eclectic mix. It's so fun to listen to because you never know where you're going. Each song, you know, takes you on this world music journey, really. And to be able to have everybody doing the concerts and the new album, there's so much joy in it. When you're putting together a band, obviously you need the talent to be able to play the instruments, but there must be something else that makes it work, because you can tell when a band is, you know, they've got something. And do you know how to define that or describe that to someone who might be thinking, I want to get that too?
That is not easy. I tried to ease that process by putting in this letter that I distributed a description of what I loved in my life, in my musical life, and what I was hoping for with this group, so people would have some idea from that before they called me up or I called them. It wouldn't just be a cold call.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, I think sometimes it's just luck of the draw. But also, if you get a bunch of people together and they actually have said, I'll give this a try, or I'm excited, I'll show up. Once you're in a room together, when everyone feels that they're working together as a team and there is a genuine love for the process of rehearsing and developing music and researching new music, you know that pretty early on when you've put a group together, and that's a wonderful feeling.
I would imagine, and that comes across, and I don't know how to describe it myself, but sometimes you can just tell that there's a connection, a shared dream, something that's happening with the musicians, and that is a pretty fantastic part of Brass Lassie, as far as I can tell. And you have some great, you've been connected to Northfield for a long time. We briefly mentioned that, and so it's fun for you to come back here, you mentioned, and to be performing. And how do you think, having your roots in Northfield shaped some of your musical journeys?
That is a very interesting question. I had a wonderful music upbringing here in Northfield. At the public schools, the training and the atmosphere was just absolutely wonderful. And also being able to tap into the colleges for concerts and teachers and just hanging out, even at dances, which was illegal, but I used to sneak into them at Carleton and St. Olaf as a teenager.
We won't tell.
No, we won't tell. But, I heard a lot of live music that way that I might not have otherwise, because it's Northfield.
Mm-hmm.
And my family connections in Northfield, my grandfather, Kenneth John McKenzie, emigrated to Northfield, or to Minnesota, as an 8 or 9 year old boy from rural Nova Scotia. And back in those days, that would have been a Gaelic, or Gaelic, as we say, speaking area.
Mm.
Much of Nova Scotia still is Gaelic speaking, but particularly at that point in time, he came from a Gaelic speaking home front. And when that finally sunk into me, we didn't talk about that as a family, but when I finally looked at the dates and I visited where he would have come from in Nova Scotia, where that family would have come from, it really struck me deeply, and suddenly I felt this blood's memory and started learning Scottish Gaelic, mainly to sing it. So we've incorporated quite a bit of Scottish Gaelic song into Brass Lassie.
It's a really beautiful story. And what you say, I think, is something that not everybody who grows up here maybe appreciates till after they are grown, the access to all of those different sounds and arts opportunities and live experiences that not every small town has. And that's a pretty great thing. I do want to mention, if folks aren't going to be able to make it to the Friday performance with Laura McKenzie and Brass Lassie at the Armory Square, again, that's Friday, October 21st at 7:30, or if you're listening on Saturday morning's rebroadcast, there are a couple other upcoming dates we want to mention. Brass Lassie is going to be at the Celtic Junction Arts Center on Friday, November 18th at 7:30, and that is in St. Paul. And then also at the Parkway Theater on Friday, January 13th. So folks should probably get tickets for that one. I know there was a show I wanted to go to that I just got an email from them. And by the morning, I got the email. Afternoon, already sold out.
Yeah, so it's not a very big theater, and that's one of its assets. It's a wonderful place to play.
Mm-hmm. So you never know. And I think Jessica Paxton is up there, and folks may know that name from KYMN for the many years that she did the afternoon show and all of her talents with music in Northfield. So those are some exciting opportunities coming up. And I'm just so excited for you to be here in Northfield and for folks to hear live that music. That must feel good to be able to be on stage, as it has probably been a while.
Since I've been on stage with Brass Lassie.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, as you can imagine, it's a big band.
Mm-hmm.
So they are all busy professional musicians. We don't get to perform very often. So each event like this is rare and precious and beautiful in that rare way.
Mm-hmm. So folks should go ahead, get your tickets ahead of time. Again, you can go to Brass Lassie, BrassLassie.com, and you can get those, click to get the link to the tickets on Eventbrite, or you can go to Armory Square and they will also hook you up. And I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. And also, I'd like to mention the doors open at 6:30. So if you want to come in early and get a beverage and visit with your friends, you are very welcome.
Well, that's a great tip. Yes. So you don't just have to come for the concert. We can all make those connections again. I want to thank Laura McKenzie for being my guest today on Arts Annie Radio. I'm going to go ahead and during the interim break, pop on some more music so we can get another glimpse of Brass Lassie. And folks, this is going to be the Ann Lacey's Reel Tay Bank Shenanigans from Brass Lassie as we switch out the studio. We'll be right back with more on Arts Annie Radio. Again, Brass Lassie. I highly recommend you go to their website and take a listen. And this one in particular has the video of the everybody playing in the studio when they did the recording. And that is extra fun to be able to see them with their instruments and all the great talents that they have. So we are moving on to our second segment where we're going to be talking about the new productions at the Northfield Arts Guild Theater. This is exciting. They have two shows. I think this might be the first time that they've ever had two shows at once. And so joining us today, Misha Edwards is here. She's from the production of The Revolutionists. And then Sebastian Lawler and Susan Carlson are here from The Outsider. So this is exciting that they're opening up. It's tonight they open up from one show. We'll talk about that in a minute because it's a brand new thing the Arts Guild is doing. But Misha, welcome to Arts Annie Radio. And you also have a new role at the Northfield Arts Guild. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, as performing arts manager, I've been lucky very lucky to work with the Guild through the years, but this is the first time in an official capacity. And I have some big shoes to fill. There have been some amazing community people, Rachel Hyder, in that role, and she has been amazing at helping me learn the job. So big shoes to fill, little time to get into it, but it's been just a blessing so far.
It's wonderful. And you also are doing a dual role because now you are directing this production of The Revolutionists. And both of these plays, I would imagine, are plays that folks aren't as familiar with. And so we definitely want to be able to give people a sense. They both have the some political it's a political story. There's no undertones. It's obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
Straight out.
And so that's good for this season that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. What do you want to say about The Revolutionists and how you do describe it to folks?
Oh, that's a good question. The Revolutionists, definitely a very political play. It is a feminist comedy, and it deals with three women who existed. Olympe de Gouges, who was a playwright. This is all during the French Revolution. Marie Antoinette, who I'm pretty sure we're all familiar with. And Charlotte Corday, who murdered Marat, the Jean-Paul Marat. Yeah. So it's a play within a play. It takes place in Olympe's mind. And she is imagining what would happen if they had all met. There is also a fourth character who is a compilation of a lot of women from Saint-Domingue, which is now Haiti. A lot of revolutionists during their own, but also our character is a spy. For she works both angles. So she is representative of all the women whose names we don't know. And she is played by an actor. All the actors are fantastic, but she's definitely played by someone who brings her spirit out.
Yeah, it's a play, like I said, that many folks may not know. It is by Lauren Gunderson, and it takes place in 1793 Paris. So how did you, connect with that? And I think it's really fascinating how it's a story about these women making change, and that's probably something we can definitely hook on to.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, all three women, the real women, were executed for speaking up and standing out, and they were persecuted. But it's an oddly uplifting play at the end because their spirit lives on, and it's about the stories that get told and the stories we hear. And we also had this amazing dramaturg. His name is Sebastian Lawler.
And he's right here.
Yeah. Who helped us with a lot of French history and pronunciations through French language. So we got a lot more of an understanding of the history side than we would have had if I'd just done it in an academic way. So,
wow, Sebastian, let's jump in. Your name has been called.
Indeed. Throwing my hat in the ring.
And you've done a lot of theater.
Yes.
And that's been a wonderful thing. But I did not know your connections to understanding French history.
Oh, certainly. Well, I was a history major at Kalamazoo College, and I graduated pretty recently. And I know especially French revolutionary history is pretty fascinating to me. It's kind of the iconic revolution whenever you're talking about historical topics for that. And it gets referenced all the time by all sorts of other folks, especially. It was interesting kind of delving more into this and just getting the information for the show, because there's a lot of kind of complicated stuff going on in the French Revolution that leads it from this sort of protest against, the monarchy and attempt to create this democracy into this whole crazy, gigantic mess of, yes, we must destroy the enemies of the revolution, and folks like Olympe de Gouges especially get caught up in that, because Olympe de Gouges especially, just a playwright, not just a playwright, but not like a threat to the state, and mm-hmm. It's an interesting one, just talking about especially political crises going out of control. As far as history goes, French Revolution is a great example of that.
Yeah, and so you were both the dramaturg on that production, but you're also in The Outsider, which is a second show that's running at the Arts Guild right now on different times, so it's not one long night. Each night has its own production, and The Outsider is by Paul Slade Smith, and it's directed by Deanne Hyder. Folks may know that name too in town, and so it's amazing all the talents that we have here. Tell us a little bit. I don't know if you or Susan want to jump in, and they're both pointing at each other.
So The Outsider is fun because it's definitely it's focused on a slightly different sort of politics. I know I don't know if it's explicitly feminist in any particular way, but it is definitely, it's definitely a comedy, and it's about sort of the, particularly the differences between, like, the bureaucratic side of politics and the, you know, actual campaigning side of politics, mm-hmm. and how the skill sets that you need for both of those things are dramatically different. I play this guy Dave, who's this campaign manager for this lieutenant governor who has just become governor and is great at the bureaucracy and is absolutely abysmal at the campaigning. And I spend most of the show desperately trying to keep this man in office. It's
And is this a contemporary story then, Susan?
Yes, it's meant to be present day. It was written
pretty recently, I think.
Now I've forgotten, like 2015, mm-hmm. something like that. So definitely, you know, in our present political atmosphere as far as campaigning goes and how people approach getting other people into office. And mm-hmm. it's kind of interesting. So Sebastian and I both play, but I keep saying political operatives, but every time I say that, it's like sounds like a bad thing, but meaning that they are both behind the scenes people. Mm-hmm. Whose job it is to, you know, figure out how to get somebody else into office. And so you're his chief of staff, and I'm a pollster. I'm all about the numbers, which is also sort of interesting.
It's fun to think about our own current world being reflected on the stage mm-hmm. at the same time we're living it in real life. Yeah. And so that must have been really fun to explore, but they've made this a comedy.
I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And partly, as I think the best comedies do, it pushes what we think of as sort of normal to the comic extreme. You know, can you come up with, you know, the worst possible person not to be in government, but the worst possible person you can think of to try to put out there on the campaign trail. And that's where the play starts, is that you suddenly have somebody who's in this position of having to campaign, and it is so not his thing. And what everybody else around him is trying to do to, you know, make this thing succeed.
Yeah, it's described as he's an inept politician. Is that
He's a very good politician on that bureaucratic side, but not a good politician on the shake hands and kiss the baby side.
And that is something we've learned a lot more about these days of what it takes to, behind the scenes, make all of those happen and make decisions about how you're going to move forward, what you're going to take your candidate, your challenger on. And so I can imagine it makes a great play.
Mm-hmm. And the one actually sort of interesting decision I think the playwright made is there isn't, at this point in whatever is going on, there isn't a challenger. So it's really all about, you know, this guy becoming a candidate in some way. So so he's, you know, he has to be able to do it, but he doesn't have any opponent to bounce off of or anything. So that's
And it sounds like both of these plays have real reflection points for us in our current world that can, you know, be illuminating to us if we went to the stage. Even though your play, The Revolutionist, is 17, let's see, I got to get my date, 93. And so are you hoping that people will make that connection and do some of that reflection?
Most definitely. And there are some references that are written throughout the play that show that Lauren Gunderson mixed the time periods a little bit. We have maybe it's not giving it away too much. There's a reference to Les Mis, which is pretty blatant. It's not disguised at all.
And when was that? Les Mis was 18-something.
Oh, well, it's set in, I think, the mid-1800s. Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I'm forgetting the actual date, but definitely not the French Revolution, the first one, a different French Revolution.
Mm-hmm. So there are contemporary references, and some of the jokes are more modern. And we tried with some of the dress, the costumes, there's a modern piece somewhere. Some of it's hidden a little bit, but on every woman, you've got some contemporary looks. So the struggle, the feminist struggle, the political struggles, I hate to use this word, but they're timeless. They are. And definitely relatable.
And that is something I think really interesting for us to think about, because oftentimes we feel like this is the struggle, right? But it's an echo of what's, you know, come before. Yeah. There's that it's not all anew every 4 years or 3 years or 2 years.
It's funny how the older we get, how much more apparent that becomes.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, speaking as a history student, everything since the, you know, fall of the monarchies and the creation of democracies, there's a lot of similarities in all the politics, especially, I think both of these shows touch a lot on the power of perception. I mean, you know, that's true even in monarchies, but, like, so much about politics is how are you perceived, and, Olympe de Gouges being a playwright kind of shaped public perception with her words, and the characters in our play trying to stay in office by not being perceived as terribly inept, you know? There's a lot to think about there, actually, I think, just how folks consider power and, you know, the government and society.
I think the other, this just came to me, so this may be idiotic when I say it out loud, but that there is also, I think, a point of sometimes the distance between people, you know, the public or the people, and what they perceive as of what their government is and what it's doing to
or
them,
not doing.
For them or not for them or to them or whatever. And I think that it's not, you know, a major theme, but I think that is certainly one of the things that's underpinning, you know, all the action of both plays.
Exactly. And we should tell people, because I want to make sure and have people understand this way that you're presenting the plays at the Northfield Arts Guild, that both are happening during the same runtime, but never on the same night.
Exactly.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's opens for 3 weekends it's running, right? And
right.
So probably the easiest thing would be to direct them to the northfieldartsguild.org website. But people can see both plays. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Well, and I think the reason we're doing 3 weekends is so that both plays have our usual 6 performances, and some of those are evening performances and some are matinees. And I wasn't part of the date picking, but that was how it was sorted out, so that over the 3 weekends we have, you know, that usual opportunity to see a show.
Right,
so.
And in addition to Sunday matinees, there's Saturday matinees,
a couple
too.
Saturday
Correct.
Matinees
that's
as
new.
Well.
Mm-hmm. So that's new, and yeah. That should be an opportunity for, you know, for people to maybe add something into their weekend that it fits a little bit better with all the things that are going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can see 2 shows in one day.
That's true. There are some days where it's both a matinee and an evening show.
And we were hoping to help people cope with the political season by putting these on right now. So.
Well, that brings me to the question that I was thinking, that what I would look forward to in both of these is because they're comedies, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes when it's real life, it's kind of hard to laugh at what's going on. But when you can see it on a stage, as people who've been immersed in this world of these plays, has laughing been helpful?
Yeah.
Well, I think so.
You know, well, most definitely for our group, because it is 4 women, a 4-female cast. And with the rights struggle that we've had recently, that I believe has helped us a lot. I should say, though, Paula, that it is a dark comedy, The Revolutionists is. We find it really funny, but we've been on the inside. I think people will. The cast is terrific. They've got a strong connection to one another. But it is a dark comedy. So.
Yeah, we got to get that out there, because that's a different slice of comedy. But it's important. And I think it gives us a chance to look back again at that historical echo that comes, you know, through all time back, you know, 200-300 years ago. And how about for your cast? Tell us a little bit about working together and, you know, trying to make this comedy, you know, on stage come unfold.
Well, I think one of the things that helps is the play takes place over just 3 days. So, and most of it is on one day. And so just in terms of being able to work comedy on the stage, that sense of urgency you have about, you know, this has to happen. This has to happen. This has to happen. And, you know, so everybody is like, you know, pushing. And that. So I think that makes it fun to do, and also, you know, is part of the comedy right there. So,
well, yeah, it's fun to, especially, I mean, so many political concerns these days are really more of like a partisan thing. But this is much more about the actual structure of the office, so you don't necessarily have, you don't have to think so much about the, you know, intense partisan debates that are currently, you know, roiling all of our politics and such. You can just sort of think about, oh, this is kind of, there's some silliness in how the system is set up, actually. There's a lot of silliness.
Mm-hmm. And then it does sort of land pretty firmly on the side of, you know, to people in government, government is a job to get done. You know, and how does that balance with how you get yourself there to be able to get the job done? So that's, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's fascinating to think about.
I'm worrying a lot about spoilers, I have to tell you. I've got a little voice in my head saying, okay, don't give away jokes.
Well, at least we don't have spoilers because everybody knows what happens to the three real women. So
they all die.
Oh, for sure. They all die, but they live on in different ways. So.
Yeah, and your play is a play within a play. And so trying to stage that has been kind of a fascinating experiment, really.
And we decided to embrace that. You will see scripts on stage, not they fit the time period. The actors are using them as props. It's a comment on how the play unfolds in Olympe's mind. We see her at the beginning starting to write it. And then as the characters come in, the play goes further and further. So the actors are using them as props and references with certain things. So that's something I've never tried before. And I wasn't sure how it would go, how my decision would impact the actors. But last night, at Final Dress, they know how to use those things. And they're supports. They're not crutches. And they're to demonstrate the unfolding of the play. So
I think I kind of like that echo of, you know, the play as life and the imagination and how it all is intertwined. Mm-hmm. And maybe we have to think about what's the real story and what's the imagined story. That's a really good echo that is happening. Mm-hmm.
My cast handles it so well, too. There was a concern. It's like, am I giving them an obstacle to work through by giving them these papers and asking them to use them? They're doing a beautiful job with them.
So that'll be fun to see. Again, that's The Revolutionists, and that opens up tonight, Friday the 21st at 7:30, and then runs for those 3 weekends. I think it's easier if we just direct people to the website and let them pick the days that work. But I was thinking if people have, this is the opening show for the season of the Northfield Arts Guild Theater, and if they have season tickets, do they get to see both of these plays with the season tickets?
Yes, it's part of the season ticket, So counting these two plays together, it's a five-show season. People buying season tickets have an option to add the Purple Door production of Newsies as well. There are actually two season tickets. But, yeah, so tonight is the opening night. If people like opening nights, tonight is the opening night for Revolutionists, and tomorrow night is the opening night for The Outsider. So Friday, Saturday, boom, boom.
And so I was thinking of the staging then, because you aren't going to be able to, you know, or are you redoing the set every time that the productions come on?
Well, I was fortunate enough to work with Dion. We worked together with Mark Robinson, who is our set designer. And really, it's furniture pieces that get swapped. We use the same space. And I think we only have one part of a wall that gets switched. So we made it so it would be efficient for everyone because we do have to change over every time. Like tonight, we have The Revolutionists. We actually have the Saturday matinee, too, at 2. But then
for your show, right?
Right. So then we switch over for The Outsider tomorrow afternoon. So they're kind of more back-to-back, the Saturdays are. But Mark worked really hard, and Dion's been amazing to communicate. And we figured out a way. It seems very painless for us all switching over.
Yeah.
So we just need
We've had a great stage manager who just last night we were getting notes and he was back there getting the stuff already shifted and so that it would be ready for the folks today.
And communication has been the key because we've had to communicate with their stage manager. Ours have had to communicate. So it's really one big team with two different plays.
It sounds like a great opportunity for folks to go have a few laughs and enjoy some great acting and stories on the stage. So. Yeah. I'm thrilled for you, and I want to thank Misha Edwards, Sebastian Lawler, and Susan Carlson for being my guests on Artsany Radio. please check out northfieldartsguild.org on the theater page. You'll find all the details, and you can just simply click and get your tickets. You can also show up at the downtown location and buy them, or go to the theater. But you do run the risk if you go to the, on the night of the show or the afternoon of the show of not getting a ticket, so I recommend getting them in advance. Mm-hmm.
But there, I believe there will be tickets at the box office.
There are.
This weekend, yeah. We know that.
Especially. So, yeah. Folks want to do that. So thank
please
you.
Please come help us get going.
And folks, this is Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. I've got one quick plug again for our Northfield Living Treasure Award, which we are currently taking nominations for. This is an award that honors individuals who have over a long period of time made significant contributions to Northfield in, through, or on behalf of the arts and culture, and enhances the reputation of the city and the quality of life of its residents and visitors. You can go to the Northfield Arts, the City of Northfield website and click on the Living Treasure Award in the Arts and Culture Commission section, or just do a search and you'll find it. Please bring in those applications. The deadline is approaching. And I hope that folks, you keep listening to Art Zany Radio, and always, in the meantime, until next time, enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany Radio for the Imagination with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.
Connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org. Or call 507-645-8877.
Some days, I feel so down, I can barely get out of bed. Is this depression?
Mental Health Minnesota is here to help 7 days a week with resources, peer support, online screenings, connections to treatment, and crisis services. It's anonymous, confidential, and free of charge. Whether you're living with a mental health condition, are concerned about someone you love, or could use some support, Mental Health Minnesota is here for you. MentalHealthMN.org. Sponsored by Mental Health Minnesota, the Minnesota Broadcasters Association, and this station.